Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to People You Need to Know on Sparkplug Radio. I'm your host, Sparkplug, publisher of People You Need to Know magazine, Atlanta's official magazine uplifting women business owners. Our show today is brought to you by the third annual Helping Women Succeed in Atlanta Spring Empowerment Summit. When we get back from the break, we're going to be speaking with Ms. Credrina Warren, president of the Warren Financial Group, about Financial Literacy 101.
This is Jacqueline Benjamin Thomas, VP of Ideas at People You Need to Know magazine, Atlanta's official magazine uplifting women business owners. And I'd like to personally invite you to our third annual Helping Women Succeed in Atlanta Spring Empowerment Summit. This event on May 4th will include a fashion show hosted and produced by Renee Noor, former Ebony Fashion Fair model. We have some phenomenal speakers lined up who will talk about the power that women bring to the table, leadership, how to win like a champion, door prizes, giveaways, and more. So come out and be inspired. At People You Need to Know magazine, we believe when women succeed, the nation prospers. Get your tickets now at upliftwomen2013.eventbrite.com or call 770-964-1000. That's 770-964-1000.
It's the Spring Summit to empower women, the third annual Helping Women Succeed in Atlanta. Saturday, May 4th. Call 770-964-1000.
Welcome back to Sparkplug Radio. My guest today is a native of Bronx, New York. She graduated cum laude from Florida A&M University and holds an MBA from the University of Phoenix. As the president of the Warren Financial Group, LLC, she promotes financial literacy and helps her clients navigate the financial waters from birth to retirement. We are honored to have on the phone today a young lady who is quickly making a good name for herself as a financial authority in Metro Atlanta. Ms. Credrina Warren, welcome to Sparkplug Radio.
Good morning, Sparkplug. Thank you so much for having me. It definitely is an honor to be on your show today.
All right. How are you today?
I'm doing fantabulous. Thank you.
All right. Well, are you ready to talk about financial literacy 101?
I definitely am. It's one of my passions, so I'm definitely ready to get started.
Well, let's do it then. When it comes to financial literacy, what is the best way for a person to budget their money?
Well, when it comes to budgeting, in its simplest form, it's done by ensuring that you account for all of your income coming in and all of your liabilities for a specific time frame, basically monthly. When people think about budgeting, the real art of budgeting is going to come when you have long-term benefits, such as being able to allocate your money in a way that allows you to pay your bills on time or before their due date, as well as capitalize on getting the most interest as far as a return on your money. So really what that means is that people should be keeping a financial journal, spreadsheet, or using some kind of online service that will allow them to input all of the data to show them how much money they have coming in from different resources and how much money they have going out. This will help them to pretty much make sure that they don't have more month left over than they do money before their next paycheck comes in.
All right. Well, Ms. Warren, we can't talk about financial literacy without talking about debt. How do you manage debt in a society that screams buy it today, buy it now?
Well, really, when we talk about managing debt, debt management is going to involve keeping your debt-to-income ratios intact, as well as devising a payoff plan and making sure that you know what your limits are. And as far as calculating your debt-to-income ratio, people need to realize that they're going to want to add up all of the money that they spend each month on bills and then divide that by their net income. They shouldn't really include things like food and utilities or entertainment spending, personal hygiene items or grooming, because those things are going to vary. They're not always very consistent from month to month. So if they do the main liabilities that they have and they divide that by their net income, then they're going to be able to see what their debt-to-income ratio is. That's going to dictate whether or not they really should be doing that extra spending and, you know, acquiring new assets that they may not be able to afford. A lot of times people want to know why I suggest that they use their net income versus their gross income. It's because you don't get to spend your gross. You get to spend your net. You don't bring home everything that it says that you earn. You bring home, you know, a difference after you've paid taxes and insurance and, you know, premiums and things of that nature. So when a person goes for a loan or a car or a mortgage, they may, you know, have those institutions say that their debt to income will be calculated using their liabilities and then using their gross income, but that's for qualifying for those loans. For our purposes and for our listeners, we want to make sure that they use the information I gave them today, which is using your net income and the expenditures that they have on a month-to-month basis. So really quick, if you make $2,000 a month and you're spending $1,500 a month, then your debt-to-income ratio is pretty much going to be 75%, and that's really high. At the most, a person should not want to exceed 35 to 40% as far as a debt-to-income ratio is concerned.
All right. Well, you hear a lot of talk about having an emergency fund. How much do you recommend your clients keep in their emergency fund?
Well, typically, I would always recommend that they should have an emergency fund that has a minimum of 3 to 6 months of their net income. However, over the last 5 years, we've, you know, really seen how the economy has turned, how people have been unemployed for lengthier periods of time. And so the norm, which would have been 3 to 6 months, I'm now encouraging people to reach for a 12-month of emergency fund. It's better to be overfunded than wish you had more money if you do ever have to use it.
Okay. Well, in our current economy, how do you save for retirement?
You know, I get this question all the time, and really, saving for retirement can be done in so many different ways. But at its core, it really does have to be done consistently. So that's what I need people to understand first. Saving for retirement has to be a consistent process. So a person should make a financial commitment in terms of how much they're going to contribute and the frequency, whether it's monthly, quarterly, semi-annual, or annually. You have to have a commitment to what you're going to do. Once the person does that, then they can find the best vehicle to save those contributions in. They should really commit to making annual increases to whatever contribution they come up with until they retire. For most people, it's really going to be easy for them to use the vehicle that's offered through their employer because it's going to be pre-tax, it's going to be payroll deductible, and you don't have this, you don't have to worry about, you know, taking the time out to separate those funds. It's going to automatically be done, you know, with a payroll deduction. Also, you know, the great thing about that is some companies do offer matching dollars. So I'm always going to encourage people to try and take advantage of any additional contributions to a retirement plan that they can. If their employer doesn't offer this benefit at their job, then they need to seek out other means. They can speak with their banking institution, or they can work with a financial advisor to establish an account such as an IRA or a high-yield savings account or even an annuity. These are all different options that allow them to save for their future self. And at a minimum, people really should save at least 10% of their gross income. So it's a little bit different here. We don't want to save 10% of the net income. We want to save 10% of the gross income to give you the most bang for your buck so that you have more money saved for your future self. And if you make, you know, $40,000, you should be saving at least $4,000 a year. You know, you're the only one who's responsible for your future self.
When I talked to a lady yesterday, a business owner, about you being on the show this morning, and she wanted to know that if she had to start all over at 50 with her retirement, is it too late?
It's never too late to saving for retirement. And the reason why is because you have to have something. What people need to realize is depending on where they're at in the game in terms of saving for retirement is going to dictate what type of lifestyle they can live in retirement. So at 50, clearly, she's closer to retirement age than her counterpart would be at 25. However, she's also more established in terms of the amount of debt that she has already incurred, and potentially she has positioned herself in a way that she has paid off some of those debts so that she can be in the clear when she gets to retirement. So if she's shooting for, let's say, retirement based off of Social Security, then she may be looking at, you know, between 65 and 66, depending on what she wants to do. So that gives her, you know, another 15 years to start saving. You can do a lot of damage financially in terms of socking away enough money to have a comfortable retirement. Something else that a person in that position may want to consider is that they may not be able to be 100% retired. They may have to be what we call semi-retired. That means having like a part-time job, being a consultant in their, you know, field of expertise. But you have to make adjustments to your lifestyle because you have to be realistic about where you are and where you're going to be. So retirement may have looked like something else to her when she first started her career, but the reality is that we got to figure out what's going to be your retirement reality now based off of your current circumstances. So I would highly encourage her and anyone else in that particular circumstance to work with someone and helping them to identify where they're at, where they want to be, and how they're going to get there.
All right. Well, Katrina, we all know that life insurance is a must. But from a wealth, from a building wealth point of view, what do you tell your clients about life insurance?
Well, I tell people that life insurance is not an option. It's mandatory. I personally feel that life insurance should be a requirement of everyone, just like it's required that you have auto insurance if you drive a car. It's required that you have homeowners insurance if you have a mortgage. If you're living life, I think it should be required that you have life insurance. It's a social responsibility to you and your family because of what life insurance can do. Most people think of life insurance in its purest form that it's going to provide a death benefit to somebody. But what they're forgetting is that life insurance has evolved. Life insurance can provide living benefits to help with major health issues while you're living. It can also help to supplement retirement. It can help to supplement funding a child's education. And ultimately, it will take care of a person's final expenses, but it can also leave a family legacy. See, life insurance, when you think about it, is the only legal way to buy money. And I say that loosely, but ultimately, life insurance provides peace of mind and financial security. A person can buy term and invest a difference. You know, we have some people out there who, you know, always will suggest that they buy term because it's the least expensive, and then take the difference in that money and invest it in, you know, mutual funds, bonds, or stocks. Or you can buy permanent insurance and know that you will receive cash value. I recommend that everyone get some form of insurance at a minimum to cover those final expenses. But I also think that people should buy insurance that's going to fit their personal needs and their budget.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop you right there. And finally, how can our listeners connect with you?
Listeners can connect with me by either calling the office at 770-627-3352. That's 770-627-5027. Or they can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Warren Financial Group. And lastly, you can follow us on Twitter at WFG Talk as the handle. And we also have a website, www.warrenfinancialgroup.com. That's www.warrenfinancialgroup.com.
All right. Well, Ms. Katrina Warren, president of the Warren Financial Group, LLC, thanks for spending some of your most valuable time with us today.
Thanks, Spark Plug. Look forward to seeing you on May 4th.
All right. You've been listening to Spark Plug Radio, the radio station connecting you to women who are doing great things right here in Metro Atlanta. To listen to even more people you need to know, just Google Spark Plug Radio or visit our website at sparkplugpeople.com and be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at PYNTK. I want to take a moment to thank our executive producer, Ms. Jacqueline Benjamin Thomas, for doing another splendid job. So until next time, I have one question for the women business owners listening to this show. Isn't it time for you to look like a superstar in People You Need to Know magazine? Give us a call today to find out how we can provide you with world-class marketing for your business. Thanks again for tuning in to Spark Plug Radio.